Chapter 4. A Farewell and a Welcome. Getting Granny Weatherwax's corpse down the winding stair with its tiny little steps into tiny little cottage the following morning was not helped by the big jug of cider which Nanny Ogg was emptying speedily, but nevertheless they got it done without a bump. They laid Granny's body carefully in the wicker casket, and Tiffany went out to the barn to fetch the wheelbarrow and shovels while Nanny Ogg caught her breath. Then, together, they gently lifted the basket into the wheelbarrow and placed the shovels on either side of her. Tiffany picked up the handles of the barrow. "You stay here now, Rob," she said to the Feagle as he and his little band appeared from their varied hiding places and lined up behind her. "This is a hag thing, you ken. You cannot help me." Rob Anybody shuffled his feet. "But ye are old hag, and you ken the genie," he began. "Rob Anybody?" Tiffany's steely gaze pinned him to the ground. "You remember the chief hag, Granny Weatherwax? Do you want her shade to come back and tell you what to do for ever and ever?" There was a group moan, and Daft Woolly backed away, whimpering. "Then understand this. This is something we hags must do by ourselves." She turned to Nanny Ogg, resolute. "Where are we going, Nanny?"
"Esme marked a spot in the woods, Tiff, where she wanted to be planted," Nanny replied. "Follow me, I know where it is."
Granny Weatherwax's garden was cheek by jowl with the woodland beyond, but the journey felt a long way to Tiffany before they arrived at the heart of the forest, where a stick was pushed into the ground, a red ribbon tied to the top of it. Nanny passed Tiffany a shovel, and the two of them started digging in the cool early morning air. It was hard work, but Granny had chosen her place well, and the soil was soft and friable. The hole finally dug. Mostly, it has to be said, by Tiffany. Nanny Ogg, sweating cobs, according to her, rested on the handle of her shovel and took a swig from her flagon as Tiffany brought the wheelbarrow over. They laid the wicker basket gently in the hole and then stood back for a moment. Without a word being said, together, solemnly, they bowed to Granny's grave. Then they picked up the shovels again and started to fill it back in. Kathunk, kathunk. The earth built up over the wicker until all that could be seen was soil, and Tiffany watched it flow in until the last crumb had stopped moving. As they smoothed the fresh mound of earth, Nanny told Tiffany that Granny had said she wanted no urns, no shrines, and definitely no gravestone. "Surely there should be a stone," said Tiffany. "You know how badgers and mice and other creatures can lift the earth. Even though we know the bones are not her, I, for one, would want to be sure that nothing is dug up until..." She hesitated. "The ends of time," said Nanny. "Look, Tiff, Esme told me to say, if you wants to see Esmeralda Weatherwax, then just you look around. She is here. Us witches don't mourn for very long. We are satisfied with happy memories. They're there to be cherished."
The memory of Granny aching suddenly shone in Tiffany's mind. Her own granny had been no witch, though Weatherwax had been very interested in hearing about her. But when Granny aching had died, her shepherding hut had been burned, and her bones had gone down into the hills, 6 feet deep in the chalk. Then the turf had been put back with a spot marked only by the iron wheels of the hut. But it was a sacred spot now, a place for memories. And not only for Tiffany. No shepherd ever passed without a glance at the skies and a thought for Granny Aching, who had tramped those hills night after night, her light zigzagging in the darkness. Her nod of approval had meant the world on the chalk. This spot in the woods, Tiffany realised, would be the same. Blessed. It had been a nice day for it, she thought, if there ever was such a thing as a good day to die, a good day to be buried. And now the birds were singing overhead, and there was a soft rustling in the undergrowth, and all the sounds of the forest which showed that life was still being lived blended with the souls of the dead in a woodland requiem. The whole forest now sang for Granny Weatherwax. Tiffany saw a fox sidle up, bow, and then run away because a wild boar had arrived with its family of piglets. Then there was a badger, paying no heed to those who had come earlier, and it remained, and Tiffany was astounded when creature after creature settled down near the grave and sat there as if they were domestic pets. Where is Granny now? Tiffany wondered. Could a part of her still be here? She jumped as something touched her on the shoulder, but it was just a leaf. Then deep inside, She knew the answer to her question. Where is Granny Weatherwax? It was, she is here, and everywhere. To Tiffany's surprise, Nanny Ogg was weeping gently.
Nanny took another swig from her flagon and wiped her eyes. Crying helps sometimes, she said. No shame in tears for them as you've loved. Sometimes I remember one of my husbands and shed a tear or two. The memories are there to be treasured, and it's no good to get morbid-like about it.
How many husbands have you actually had, Nanny? Asked Tiffany.
And Nanny appeared to be counting. Three of my own, and let's just say I've run out of fingers on the rest, as it were. But she was smiling now, perhaps remembering a very treasured husband. And then, bouncing back from the past, she was suddenly her normal cheerful self again. Come on, Tiff, she said. Let's go back to your cottage. Like I always says, a decent wake don't happen by itself.
As they made their way back to the cottage, Tiffany asked Nanny the question which had been burning in her mind. What do you think will happen next?
Nanny looked at Tiffany. What do you mean?
Well, Granny wasn't exactly the head witch, except that most people thought she was.
There ain't no such thing as a head witch, Tiff, you know that.
Yes, but if Granny's not here any more, do you become the not head witch?
Me? Nanny Ogg laughed. Oh, no, dear. I've had a very good life, me. Lots of children, lots of men, lots of fun, and yes, as witches go, I'm pretty good. But I never thought of stepping into Esme's shoes, ever.
Well, who is, then?
Someone's got to.
Nanny Ogg scowled and said, Granny never said as she was better than others. She just got on with it and showed 'em, and people worked it out for themselves. You mark my words. The senior witches will get together soon enough to talk about this, but I know who Granny would choose, and it's as I would too.
She stopped and looked serious for a moment.
It's you, Tiff. Esme's left you her cottage, but more than that, you must step into the shoes of Granny Weatherwax, or else someone less qualified will try and do it.
But I can't. And witches don't have leaders. You've just said that, Nanny.
Yes, said Nanny. And you must be the best damn leader that we don't have.
Don't look at me sideways like that, Tiffany Aching. Just think about it. You didn't try to earn it, but earn it you has. And if you don't believe me, believe Granny Weatherwax. She told me that you was the only witch who could seriously take her place. She said that on the night after you run with that heir.
She never said anything to me, said Tiffany, feeling suddenly very young.
Well, she wouldn't say nothing, of course she wouldn't, said Nanny. That's not Esme's way, you know that. She would have given a grunt, and maybe said, well done, girl. She just liked people to know their own strengths, and your strengths are formidable.
But, Nanny, you're older, more experienced than me. You know lots more.
And some of it I wants to forget, said Nanny.
I'm far too young, Tiffany wailed. If I wasn't a witch, I'd still just be thinking of boyfriends.
Nanny Ogg almost jumped on her. You're not too young, she said. Yours ain't what's important here. Granny Weatherwax said to me as you is the one who's to deal with the future. And being young means you've got a lot of future. She sniffed. Not more than me, that's for sure.
But that's not how it works, Tiffany said. It ought to be a senior witch. It has to be.
But her second thoughts then leapt up in her head, challenging her.
Why? Why not to do things differently? Why should we do things how they have always been done before?
And something inside her suddenly thrilled to the challenge.
Huh, Nanny retorted. You dance with the air to save the lives of your friends, my girl. Do you remember being so angry that you picked up a lump of flint and let it dribble between your fingers as if it was water? All the senior witches were there, and they took off their hats to you. You!
Hats!
She stomped off towards the cottage with just one parting shot. And remember, you chose you. That cat there, she went to you when Esme up and left.
And there the white cat was, sitting on the stump of an old birch, preening herself. And Tiffany wondered. Oh yes, she wondered.
Just as they got back to the cottage, a dishevelled but very large wizard was trying to land his broomstick by the goat shed.
It is good of you to come, Mushroom, Nanny Ogg shouted across the garden, as the gentleman smoothed down his robes, trod carefully past the herbs, and doffed his hat to them.
Tiffany noticed with glee that he had it tied onto his head with string.
Tiff, this is Mushroom Ridcully, Arch-Chancellor of Unseen University.
Tiffany had only met one or two wizards, and they'd mostly been of the type that relied on the robes, pointy hat and staff to make their point, hoping that they never had to actually do anything magical. On the face of it, Ridcully looked exactly the same. Beard, big staff with a knob on the top,
pointy hat. Wait. A pointy hat with a crossbow tucked into the hatband. The witch side of her stepped back and watched carefully. But Ridcully was not interested in her at all. To her astonishment, the Arch-Chancellor actually appeared to be crying.
"Is it true, then, Nanny? Has she really gone?"
Nanny gave him a handkerchief, and as he blew noisily into it, she whispered to Tiffany, "He and Esme were, well, you know, good friends when they were younger." She winked. The Arch-Chancellor seemed to be overcome. Nanny handed him a flagon.
"My famous remedy, your worship. Best to drink it down in one great gulp. Works a right treat for melancholy, it does. Whenever I'm a bit unsure of myself, I drinks a lot of it. Medicinal use only, of course."
The Arch-Chancellor took the flagon, swigged down a couple of gulps in one go, and then flourished it at Nanny.
"Here's to Esmeralda Weatherwax and lost futures," he said in a voice choked with sorrow. "May we all go round again."
He removed his hat, unscrewed the pointy bit, and brought out a small bottle of brandy and a cup.
"For you, Mrs. Ogg," he boomed. "And now, may I see her, please?"
"We have laid her down already, where she wanted to rest," said Nanny. "You know how it is. She didn't want no fuss." She looked at him and continued, "I'm very sorry about that, Mustrum, but we'll take you to the spot where she is now. Tiffany, why don't you lead the way?" And thus, the most important wizard in the world respectfully followed Tiffany and Nanny Ogg through the woods to the last resting place of the most important witch in the world. The trees surrounding the little clearing were full of birds singing their souls out. Nanny and Tiffany held back to allow the wizard a private moment by the grave. He sighed.
"Thank you, Mistress Ogg, Mistress Aching."
Then the Arch-Chancellor turned to Tiffany and looked at her properly.
"For the sake of Esmeralda Weatherwax, my dear, if you ever need a friend, you can call on me. Being the most important wizard in the world must mean something."
He paused.
"I have heard of you," he said, and at her gasp he added, "No, don't be surprised. You must know that we wizards keep an eye on what you witches do. We know when magic is disturbed, when something happens. So I heard about the flint. Was it true?"
His voice was brusque now, a man who did not do small talk, only big talk, and in a big voice too.
"Yes," said Tiffany, "all of it." "My word," said Ridcully. "And now I feel certain that your future is going to be, let us say, very speckled. I can see the signs in you, Mistress Tiffany Aching, and I know many people of power, people who have so much power that they don't have to wield it. You are hardly into your prime, yet I see this in you, and so I live in wonder about what you might do next."
His face now fell, and he continued,
"Would you ladies now leave me alone with my feelings? I'm sure I can find my way back to the cottage."
Later on, the Arch-Chancellor walked back to his broomstick, and Tiffany and Nanny Ogg watched him disappear in the general direction of Ankh-Morpork. The broomstick itself was wobbling about as he rose over the woods in a final salute. Nanny smiled.
"He is a wizard. He can be sober when he likes, and if he ain't, well, he can fly a broomstick well enough, with a brandy or two inside him. After all, there's not much to bump into up there."
As the morning progressed, more and more people were coming to pay their respects at the little cottage. The news had spread, and it seemed like everybody wanted to leave a gift for Granny Weatherwax, for the witch who had always been there for them, even if they hadn't actually liked her. Esme Weatherwax hadn't done nice. She'd done what was needed. She'd been there for them when they called at the cottage. She'd come out at whatever time of day or night when asked, and sometimes when not, which hadn't always been comfortable. And somehow she had made them feel safer. They brought hams and cheeses, milk and pickles, jams and beer, bread and fruit. It also seemed that broomsticks were coming through the trees from everywhere, and there was nothing a witch appreciated more than a bit of free food. Tiffany caught one elderly witch trying to stuff an entire chicken up her knickers. And as the witches turned up, the villagers began to melt away. It didn't do to be around that many witches. Why risk it? Nobody wanted to be turned into a frog. After all, who would bring in the harvest then? They started to make their excuses and sidle off, with those who had partaken of Nanny Ogg's famous cocktails sidling in a rather wobbly fashion. None of the witches had been invited, but it seemed to Tiffany they had been drawn there, just like the Arch-Chancellor. Even Mrs. Earwig turned up. She came in a carriage and pair, complete with black plumes, and her arms jingled with bangles and charms, as if the percussion section of an orchestra had suddenly fallen off a cliff, while her hat was festooned in silver stars. Her husband was dragged along beside her. Tiffany felt sorry for the man.
"Hail, sisters, and may the runes protect us on this momentous occasion," Mrs. Earwig pronounced, just loud enough to be heard by the remaining villagers. She did like to advertise her witchiness. She gave Tiffany a long stare, which infuriated Nanny Ogg.
Nanny made the briefest possible bow, then turned and said,
"Look, Tiffany, there is Agnes Knit. Watch her, Agnes!"
Agnes, a witch with a waistline that suggested she had a similar attitude to eating as the Feagles' Kelda, was out of breath, saying,
"I've been touring in Stackpole's Much Ado About Everybody. I was in Quirm when I heard, and I came as fast as I could."
Tiffany hadn't met Agnes before, but from one look at her sensible face and good-natured smile, she thought she would probably get along with her very well indeed. Then she was overcome with delight as a broomstick wobbled down to the land and she heard the familiar of her friend Petulia.
"Tiffany, I heard you were here. Do you want some help with making any sandwiches?"
Petulia offered, waving a big side of bacon as she landed. Petulia was married to a pig farmer and was acknowledged to be Lanka's best pig borer. Pig boring saved a lot of nasty squealing. A pig borer, like Petulia, would talk to the pigs until they simply died of boredom. She was also one of Tiffany's very best friends.
"Dimity is here too, and, Lucy Warbeck," Petulia continued.
The ums always got worse when she was in the company of other witches. Amazingly, she never used the word when pig-boring, which had to say something about Petulia and pigs. Tiffany and Nanny Ogg's grandsons had put up some makeshift tables. After all, everybody knows what a funeral is really for, and most people like eating and drinking, whatever the occasion. There was music, and over it all, Agnes's heavenly voice. She sang the Columbine Lament, and as its soft tune wafted over the roof and into the forest beyond, Nanny said to Tiffany, "That voice could make the trees cry." And there was dancing, no doubt helped along by Nanny Ogg's brews. Nanny Ogg could get any party singing and dancing. It was a gift, Tiffany thought. Nanny could jolly up a graveyard if she put her mind to it.
"No long faces for Granny Weatherwax, please," Nanny proclaimed. "She's had a good death at home, just as anyone might wish for. Witches know that people die, and if they manages to die after a long time, leaving the world better than they went and found it, well then, that's surely a reason to be happy. All the rest of it is just tidying up. Now, let's dance. Dancing makes the world go round, and it goes round even faster with a drop of my home liquor inside you."
Up in the roof of Granny's cottage, swinging from the boughs of the little tree that grew out of the thatch, the Knack-Mack Feagles, Rob Anybody, Daft Woody, Big Yan, and the Gonagall, Awfully Wee Billy Big Chin, were in agreement with the latter part of that statement, although they were keeping the dancing for later, mind. They stayed mostly out of sight, spotted only by one or two of the more observant witches, but now they came down to the scullery where Tiffany was starting on what the elderly, more senior witches always expected the younger girls to do, clearing up. The senior witches were beginning to gather together outside. It was time to discuss the appointment of a new incumbent to Granny Weatherwax's steading, and Tiffany wanted to keep out of the way while she thought about what she might say. As the haunting tones of Awfully Wee Billy Big Chin's mousepipes played a soft lament for the soul of the Hag of Hags, the other Feagles began raiding the tables for any leftovers the witches had missed.
"Alas, poor Granny, I knew her well,"
sighed Big Yan, swigging from a bottle of Nanny's homemade hooch.
"No, you didn't," Tiffany snapped. "Only Granny Weatherwax really knew Granny Weatherwax."
The day was still too raw for her, and the witches outside were making her nervous.
"Ha ha," laughed Daft Woolly. "It weren't me this time, Rob, nay me, what put my foot in it. I says the hag were upset, Rob, didn't he, I?"
"I'll put my boot into your face if you don't shut up,"
Big Yan growled. They'd had the drinking and eating, postponed the dancing, but wasn't it time for a wee fight? He clenched his fists, but then had to suddenly retreat as Tiffany's friends came into the scullery.
"I think it's going to be you, Tiffany," Dimity hissed, poking her in the back. "Nanny Ogg just stood up and asked for you. You'd better get out there."
"Go on, Tiff," Petulia urged. "Everyone knows what Granny Weatherwax thought of you."
And so, pushed and pulled by her friends, Tiffany left the scullery, but she hovered by the back door of the cottage, unwilling to take that final step, to make a claim. This was Granny's cottage, she still felt, even though the not-granniness was beginning to feel like a huge hole in the air around her. Tiffany looked down at her feet. Yew was twining around her legs, arching her back and rubbing her hard little head against Tiffany's boot. Outside, some of the witches were looking at Nanny Ogg, who was saying,
"Yes, ladies, Esme did tell us who her successor was to be."
She turned and gestured to Tiffany to come nearer.
"I wish I'd been there," she added. when Esme Weatherwax was made witch by Nanny Gripes. You think who makes you a witch is the kind of witch you're going to become, but we all have to find our own way, as we go along, like. Granny Weatherwax was always her own true witch self, never just another Nanny Gripes. And though I think we could all talk for ourselves, people like the Arch-Chancellor and Lord Veterinari, and indeed someone like the Low Queen of the Dwarfs, well, they want to know sometimes that they can talk to somebody who can speak, officially-like, for all witches. And I'm pretty certain they looked on Esme as being that voice of witchcraft. So we needs to listen to her voice too. And she told me who her successor should be. Yes, and wrote it on this here card. Nanny brandished in the air the card Granny Weatherwax had left on her bedside chest. Someone had clearly raised the idea of Mrs. Earwig taking over the steading. Or Mrs. Earwig had raised the prospect of her latest trainee getting the cottage. Nanny glared at her, and there was no trace of the jolly witch in her now, oh no. "Lettice Earwig just makes shiny things for her would-be witches," she stated. She ignored the humph from Mrs. Earwig as she continued. "But Tiffany Aching..." "Yes, sisters, Tiffany Aching. We've all seen what she can do. It's not about shiny charms, not about books. It's about being a witch to the bone in the darkness and dealing with the lamentation and the tears. It's about being real. Esme Weatherwax knew this with every bone in her body. And so does Tiffany Aching, and this steading is hers." Tiffany gasped as the other witches turned to look at her, and as the muttering began, she stepped forward hesitantly. Then Yu meowed, the cry cutting through the murmuring in the crowd, and the white cat came again to Tiffany's side. Suddenly there was a humming in the air, and the bees were there too. They flowed out of Granny Weatherwax's hive, circling Tiffany like a halo, crowning her, and Swarm and Girl stood on the threshold of the cottage, and Tiffany reached out her arms, and the bees settled along them and welcomed her home. And after that, on that terrible day when a farewell was said to the Witch of Witches, there was no more argument, as Tiffany Aching became, in all eyes, the witch to follow.